is. So let me remind you what the quasi-normal modes are. If you have a system which is perturbed from a stable equilibrium, it usually oscillates with certain characteristic frequencies, which is called the normal modes. If you have a certain damping involved, some dissipation of energy in the system, then these modes will be generally damped, and the corresponding oscillations, the frequencies of these oscillations, will have non-zero imaginary parts. So speaking mathematically, it means that the corresponding boundary value problem is non-Hermitian, and therefore you have a complex spectrum rather than a real one. Okay? So in particular, perturbations of gravitational backgrounds with horizons are of this type, and quasi-normal modes arise in this context. So here, this dissipation effect, or the non-hermeticity of the boundary value problem, comes from the boundary conditions, because usually you set the boundary conditions at the horizon, but whatever you have, whatever energy, whatever excitations you have, go into the horizon classically. Horizons do not radiate, so horizons absorb everything, and therefore you break by hand, by imposing these boundary conditions, you break your unitary, your Hermitian boundary value problem, and therefore you expect the complex spectrum generically. So in the last 30 years or so, quasi-normal spectra of black holes have been computed for many backgrounds in various dimensions, and mostly this work was done numerically because corresponding equations usually are very difficult to solve. So as an example, here is a Schwarzschild background, the typical Schwarzschild, standard Schwarzschild background. You can have certain fluctuations of this background. So first of all, there is a gravitational fluctuation, h mu nu, of a background where g mu nu node is this metric here. But you can also consider vector fluctuations, a mu with zero background, there is no Maxwell field involved here, or a scalar fluctuations. And with the typical ansatz, like here, you solve the corresponding equation for the fluctuations which follow from Einstein's equations, and you impose boundary conditions at the horizon and a spatial infinity. And that gives you the spectrum. So in this particular case, it will be just a discrete spectrum that will depend on the parameters characterizing your background. In this particular situation, the only parameter in question is just the mass of a black hole. So the spectrum for Schwarzschild black hole has this familiar form. Well, for many people, it's familiar. In the complex plane of a frequency. If you consider different backgrounds, the form of a spectrum will change. And I would like to talk here about the quasi-normal spectra of the so-called black brains. So in addition to time direction here, you have this hypersurface which is flat. It can have a certain dimension. Here is an example of a black free brain. It means there is a three-dimensional hypersurface here. And so the horizon will be a brain, will be a translationally invariant hypersurface. And you can also consider the same type of fluctuation, the gravitational one, the vector fluctuation, or the scalar fluctuation. But in the Fourier decomposition, so because our horizon now contains not only time, I mean, this census here contains not only time, but also spatial directions with x, y, and z. In the Fourier decomposition, there will be a dependence on q, on the momentum along the brain, along these flat directions. And therefore, the corresponding quasi-normal spectrum of black brains now will be of the form omega is a function of q, where q is this momentum along the spatial direction. So this spectrum can have a finite gap, like here, for example, when q is approaching zero, the frequency can tend to non-zero value omega naught, or it can be gapless, like an example here. And certain examples were considered in the literature. Let me just give you some generic plot as an illustration. So here we have a normal spectrum of asymptotically anti-de-Sitter five-dimensional black free brain. It has this characteristic shape, so there is an infinite sequence of frequencies in the complex omega plane. What I would like to, so here is an example. This example is for the vector type perturbation here. One important feature of this particular spectrum is the presence of this purely imaginary frequency, which sits here on the imaginary axis. And this frequency has the property that it is gapless. So when Q, then the magnitude of the spatial momentum, tends to zero, this frequency approaches the origin. So what we would like to do is to compute this particular quasi-normal frequency analytically for a generic metric characterizing a generic black break. And it will have some consequences in the CFT context. So this slide has the main result. Imagine that you have a metric which characterizes Stratton black brain. Here it's written in some number of dimensions. Number of dimensions is not relevant. So it has this translationally invariant piece. Here it's p-dimensional. In our previous example, it was three-dimensional. Otherwise, these metric entries, metric components, are pretty much arbitrary. There is some internal space, maybe compact, maybe not. It has a horizon at the value r equal to r naught, and the main result, so you can consider fluctuations of the vector type in this metric, and by analyzing equations of motion which follow from the Einstein's equation or Einstein-Maxwell equation, you can derive the following result, that the lowest quasi-normal frequency of that background is given in the limit of small q. Remember, q is the magnitude of the momentum along the brain, along these flat directions. So in the limit of small q, this lowest frequency is given by the following dispersion relation here, where the coefficient d can be expressed analytically in terms of the metric components of this generic background. Okay, so this is the main result. I spare you the details of the calculation. It's not that hard. It's just basically. So of course, the ambitious goal would be to compute all the frequencies in this example here. But this is not feasible. So these red dots are beyond the reach of analytic calculation. But what we are after is this green dot there, and that can be computed analytically for a generic background. All right. So the interesting observation, so that's just a technical result. Now, the interesting observation is that the same dispersion relation appeared previously in a very different setting. It appeared in the so-called membrane paradigm approach to black hole, black brain horizons. So we have the same metric here. And in the philosophy of membrane paradigm, one introduces the so-called stretch horizon. It's a time-like surface at in the vicinity of the true horizon R naught, slightly larger R. And if you have Einstein-Maxwell system, so you have Maxwell field in a bulk, you can define conserved currents living on the stretch horizon simply by the following formula. So you have F mu living in the bulk, the Maxwell tensor, strength field, and you convolute this with the normal to the stretch horizon, and here is a current. You can prove that it is conserved. What is more important, that you can also prove that in the approximation of low frequency, you can show that the charge density of this current satisfies the diffusion equation on the stretch horizon. And the diffusion equation is written here, where the diffusion coefficient can be expressed in terms of the metric components, and it turns out to be exactly the same formula as we had on the previous slide. So the moral of the story is that it's seemingly, so this derivation here, at least to first approximation and first glance, it doesn't have anything to do with computing the quasi-normal spectra, but it gives nonetheless the same dispersion relation as the computation of the spectrum, which I must admit I don't fully understand the implications or the reason for this coincidence, but that is a fact of life. So in the holographic context, in the context of the gauge gravity duality or ADS-FT correspondence, this result has the following significance. So if you have a pair of of a 10-dimensional gravity background and the holographically dual system, for example, at finite temperature, living at thermal equilibrium. So in 10-dimensional gravity, it corresponds to a certain black hole, a black brain, which is characterized by the collection of conserved charges, mass, angular momentum, and so on. Now, system, holographically dual system in thermal equilibrium is also characterized by the collection of conserved charges. And the dictionary of ADS CFT correspondence will tell you that the Hawking temperature must be identified with the temperature of this system in thermal equilibrium, and Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is identified with the entropy of this quantum field theory in thermal equilibrium. So if you want to consider on the field theory side deviations from thermal equilibrium, that would, according to this dictionary, that would correspond to certain fluctuations of your original gravity background. So deviation from equilibrium on the field theory side gives you the so-called hydrodynamic regime of your thermal theory. And in the hydrodynamic regime, you expect things like diffusion equations and so on with a particular dispersion relations. One of them is written here. So according to the area safety dictionary, what you have to do on the gravity side is to consider gravitational or Abbot field fluctuations of this original background. And Einstein's equations give you certain equations that these fluctuations satisfy, plus the boundary conditions, and you compute the quasi-normal spectrum, and the quasi-normal spectrum must be identified with the dispersion relations on the field theory side. And moreover, there is a theorem in the ADS-CFT context. There is a theorem which tells you that quasi-normal frequencies exactly are the poles of the retarded correlation functions that appear in the dual quantum field theory. So again, in the once you accept ADS-CFT, it's just a theorem which follows from the prescription for computing the correlation functions. So therefore, the formula that I was showing on the intermediate slide, this formula for diffusion coefficient, in the context of ADS-CFT of gauge gravity duality, simply gives you explicit expression for a diffusion constant of some U1 current for a very large class of theories of gravity duals. Right? So once somebody identifies this pair, namely quantum field theory at finite temperature and a corresponding metric which corresponds to gravity dual to this quantum field theory, one can immediately compute using that formula, one can immediately compute the diffusion coefficient. So the simplest example is the computation in n equals 4 supersymmetric Young Mills theory, the dual to which is simply a Schwarzschild black hole of sufficiently large radius for a black brain, if you want. And using that formula, you can deduce the diffusion coefficient for the R currents in the n equals 4 super Young Mills. In the GR context, there is also an interesting consequence. The interesting consequence is the following, that so a long time ago, namely when this paper on the diffusion of stretched horizon appeared, Alex Buchel and Jim Liu proved a very interesting theorem saying that for a gravitational vector type perturbation, this coefficient D, the diffusion coefficient D, is actually universal. So for a diffusion of stretched horizon, for all these types of metric that I showed on one of these transparencies, the diffusion coefficient is simply equal to 1 over 4 pi t, where t is the Hawking temperature. All right? That's an interesting result by itself. Now, if you combine this calculation I was talking about with this universality result, it simply means that for a generic black brain, there exists a quasi-normal frequency which is universal for all these types of metric. And this quasi-normal frequency in the limit of small q's, small spatial momenta, has this form. It has this, it is just purely imaginary. And moreover, it has this slope, this coefficient, which is equal to 1 over 4 pi t. So again, in the context of gauge gravity duality, one can remark that this result, so Buchel and Liu theorem plus this computation of quasi-normal spectrum, completes yet another proof, and this is a third proof already, of the universality of the shear viscosity over entropy density ratio in quantum field theories of gravity duals. So I will not elaborate on this, but The point is that if you consider the gauge gravity duality and you compute the ratio of the shear viscosity to entropy density, then you can prove by three ways, no, it's the third one, that this ratio is equal to 1/4 pi for all theories that have gravity duals. Okay, so this universality result is an interesting thing. One can have various applications of this generic formula for the diffusion coefficient, and let me just mention one of them, which is pretty much work in progress, so it's sort of preliminary result. So you can have n equals 4 superint mills, but you can also have where you have matter in the adjunctive representation. You can also introduce fundamental matter in the setting by considering the so-called D7 brains in the probe approximation, and that gives you fundamental fermions works in your supersymmetric Young Mills theory. And for one such model, using that generic formula for the diffusion coefficient, here is a computation, numerical computation, of that diffusion coefficient multiplied by temperature as a function of a quark mass, or to be more precise, of the ratio of temperature to the quark mass. So if temperature is extremely high, you recover n equals 4 superint mills, the original result of d equal to 1/2 pi t. If you lower the temperature or this ratio t over m, this coefficient decreases, and it exhibits a certain behavior near the line of the phase transition. So it seems that this coefficient, this diffusion coefficient, has a particular critical behavior in the vicinity of phase transition, but that should be investigated better in this region. It's interesting from a point of view of the dual theory of the gauge gravity duality, because generically, when you have a transport coefficient, such as shear viscosity, bulk viscosity, various diffusion constants, and so on, they do exhibit certain critical behavior in the vicinity of phase transitions. So if you can approach the same type of behavior and calculate a critical exponent for these coefficients in the language of the dual gravity, that certainly would be an interesting result. All right, I think I stop here. Thank you very much.